So the first one they jump into is, and the first on the list here that you gave us is classical, what they call classical apologetics. And he says that they're using this term in this book. It refers to an apologetic approach that emphasizes the use of logical criteria. For example, the law of non-contradiction, of self-consistency, comprehensiveness, coherence, and that sort of thing, in determining the validity of competing religious philosophies. So they're going to use this rationalistic, logical approach with regard to argumentation and proofs is really what they're going to be dealing with in classical apologetics. They tell us that these criteria, the law of non-contradiction and so forth, are used to refute the truth claims of non-Christian worldviews and to establish the existence of God through theistic proofs. So, first, this is kind of a two-step approach, as we will see here. They will prove that God exists or give theistic proofs for God exists, and then they will show that Christianity has the God that we should be worshiping. So they tell us that this approach, in its modern form, is characterized by that kind of two-step method in apologetics. Make a case for theism, worldview that affirms the existence of one creator God, and then secondly, presents evidence that this God has revealed himself in Christ and in the Bible. So that's the kind of two-step approach that, and that's why they call this classical apologetics. The classicalists are going to claim that this is, the historical method that they have picked up throughout church history, right?
Right.
So first, prove that God exists, and then show that God revealed himself in Christ and the Bible. That's kind of the classical method, the classical two-step approach.
And like classical music, just because it was there first doesn't mean it's the end all be all of music.
That's
So,
right. That's right.
well, the most famous Christian thinker, commonly regarded as paving the way for this approach in the early, was in the 13th century, and that's Thomas Aquinas. And modern day evangelical apologetics is perhaps best represented by Norman Geisler, who was a very big fan of Aquinas. And we'll not get into the negatives yet, but there are negatives to that, but there are also positives to it, especially coming from a big thinker like Aquinas, who love him or hate him, you can't scoff at his voluminous work that
Yeah,
he's
and his
done.
impact, and his impact
Right. Yeah.
in
I mean,
both
the five
theology and
reasons. Yeah.
apologetics,
The
yeah.
five reasons are a staple of philosophy 101 classes. They're still talked about in metaphysics classes. So the Summa that he wrote, and he wrote many Summas, is well felt. In fact, I was asked to be a part of Revived Thoughts Studios as a co-host, where we talked about Thomas Aquinas. So I'll link that in the description below as well. But we discussed this approach in the part two, classical apologetics. It stands to reason, and that reason being first. So that first approach is probably more settled on reason and logic. That's where your philosophical terms come out: contingency, necessary being. The Kalam argument tends to stem from there. And then the second approach is more of a historical approach, but still logic and reason come out in there, especially when you're talking about maybe a mere Christianity type approach from C.S. Lewis, who applies a logic approach, a reason approach to the historical claims of Christianity.
Yeah, the so that's classical apologetics, and it's based on reason, and so they call this classical apologetics. It stands to reason, right? That's kind of the tag word that they give for classical apologetics.